Welcome to Culture, Talent, and Growth. Join Anish Shah and the Ruckus team as they invite dynamic leaders to share what they've learned about creating lasting culture, attracting great talent, and achieving sustainable growth. Let's get started.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. This is Solving for Attribution Challenges with RockerBots. Anish, one of our hosts, the mic to you.
My name's Anish. My background was helping to run growth for different companies for about 11 years. Spent 11 years in San Francisco, moved to New York about 4 years ago. I'm actually calling from a WeWork in Mexico City right now. So just escaped a little bit of that snow that's going to be falling in New York soon. And yeah, I run an executive recruiting firm focused on hiring senior level growth leaders, generally from very popular, fast growing startups, a lot of D2C, fintech, mobile apps. And I would say across the board from talking to performance marketers all day, getting attribution right seems to be the most difficult thing for them to do on a day-to-day basis. So I'm excited to be able to throw in this event with RockerBox and learn from all the panelists and from our co-host, Sarah, over here.
Awesome. Hey, guys, I'm Sarah. I am head of platforms and solutions at RockerBox. We work across the leading direct-to-consumer e-commerce companies, including those from our panelists, helping them get a single source of truth for all their marketing activity from digital, offline, paid, and organic, so they could best understand performance and continue to drive growth.
My name's Quinn. I've been in data for just shy of 10 years. I started at Google and working on their maps, enhancing their maps, and just sort of consuming these very large data sets. And then I spent the last 6 years at Amazon, where I've been heavily involved in analytics and marketing analytics. And I recently became the director of marketing analytics for Tomboy X, which is a very cool premium underwear company here in Seattle.
Hey, everybody. I'm Ashley. So I am the head of offline user acquisitions at Curology. I've been at Curology for the last 9 months, focused on bringing our user acquisition channels into the offline space. We've historically been very focused on digital channels, so these are new for us. Before that, I spent 8 years at Microsoft working on global advertising campaigns across all of the consumer brands at Microsoft.
Hey, everybody. I'm the paid lead at Evenly, which is an online interior design platform. Previously, I've spent some time both like in-house and at agencies. Most of my experience has been in like the credit card industry. So I used to do the paid search program for Discover Card at my last agency. And then before then, I was at creditcards.com.
Awesome. And thank you guys again for being here. We just want to obviously talking about all things attribution and kicking it off super macro, just hearing from each of you on how you use attribution in daily, monthly, weekly marketing operations, and what role it plays. And we'll go, I guess, end to end. Ashley, if you want to start.
Sure. So this is a pretty loaded question, so I'll try to keep it brief. We use attribution at sort of every step of the planning and optimization cycle in performance marketing. So on a daily basis, we're looking to understand how we can optimize the in-channel performance. So looking across our campaigns, our ad sets, and creative to find the most efficient combinations of those things that are driving, in our case, driving new signups. And then on a weekly basis, that can be, at a broader sense, looking at the different spend allocations across channels. So not just optimizing within the channel, but which channels are contributing more broadly to our acquisitions. And then monthly, it can be driving forecasting, adjusting our media mix, and doing our more longer term planning to understand where we should be allocating more resources to drive an efficient acquisition plan.
I think everything Ashley said is sort of cleanly it. When I think about the specifics of what I would look at, you know, daily versus monthly, I think maybe less intuitive, but yeah, monthly, I'm going to look at a higher level view and try to distill things into just more simple metrics. So it's very, very clean in terms of which direction. And then, you know, daily, I try to drill down to the creative level. And then also always trying to sort of overlay the attribution with macro trends to see what other, you know, headwinds or tailwinds are influencing these beyond just the pure attributes and methodology.
You mentioned macro trends. Could you dive into that a little bit?
I can. I think that there's no, you know, there's no good way when there's sort of unprecedented things, there's a lot of speculation. I think there's always speculation. Oh, you know, Halloween was 3 months different this year. Depending on your business, that can make a big difference. I should say I've been in soft lines, fashion, shoes, apparel sales mostly from Amazon on. So those seasonal trends are big, but you know, now when it's like it's an election cycle and there's this pandemic and the stimulus checks and all of these things is kind of new ground. I don't have 10 years worth of data to look at to say, you know, this is how it seemed to have shifted things last year or the year before. These trends are quite new. And there's always speculation when you're talking about seasonality and things going on in the greater economic sphere. But in particular right now, I think it's tricky. And there's definitely a lot of wonder as to how these different things have impacted. For example, it seems like I really underestimated the impact of like the stimulus check on how overall acquisition and things shifted. I thought that how could that make much of a difference in terms of people coming to, you know, online sales? And it's hard to argue with how the trend ended up looking on that.
Definitely. I mean, even staying to go over with everyone in this like acting more with COVID, thinking about shift towards has home decorations, starting to invest more in the home rather than experiences. We just said in order to talk to a bit to that, and then how do you also like use attribution to try it out, baseline those impacts?
Yeah, definitely echo both what Quinn and Ashley said. Like macro level view, this helps us like get a read on comparative channel performance, which helps with like budget allocation in month. But also like in-channel optimizations, like is what we're doing day-to-day in the channel working or not? Stepping back, like our business is pretty unique. It's a new category. So what we do is we pair users up with interior designers that fit their style profile, and they work with them to create like a 3D rendering of what their room would look like with all these products in their room. And then they get a shopping list that they can purchase those items and get them shipped directly to their house. For us, attribution is incredibly important. Just because this is such a new category. And I think there's a lot of de-risking involved. People still are a little apprehensive in purchasing furniture online without being able to sit in it or see it in person. And on that, like consumer behavior for us is highly episodic. There's a lot of touch points involved in our funnel. Our average time from like first touch to actual purchase is pretty long. I think all of this together, we have like a pretty complex value prop. So just using like a last click methodology, it can significantly undervalue like our view-based touches, which we know are impactful from incrementality testing. So like this multi-touch model helps us incorporate impressions and other like view-based channels to help refine that budget allocation a little bit and make more impactful decisions across the paid environment and help us understand like how macro level changes like a pandemic where people are spending more time in their home and thinking about fixing it up a little bit, how those channels perform with those considerations in mind.
Definitely. I think you guys all hit on where the big ones is like everyone can optimize within their respective channels and sort of within the marketing team. But then when you think more macro about both like budget asks, forecasting, and then long-term planning, our huge amount of that is being able to communicate up and out on the shifting of an attribution model and how you're measuring performance. We got a ton of questions all about like, how do you actually operationalize Octobox and Wrapperbox? And honestly, having nothing to do with us, just attribution up internally so that your exec team and your boards are understanding as much as they need to how we were looking and measuring marketing, especially moving away from the last. I'm going to put to a staying. You want to take that since you hit on it last?
Yeah, sorry. Just like general, like operationalizing and how we're like getting buy-in for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think before we really went all in on Rockerbox, we did just some like matched market testing through incrementality studies and also like promo code lift tests. And that helped us show the value of channels. Like we would run specific promo codes in like Facebook to get a better understanding on the impact of those view-based conversions. And from there, we could really see pretty clearly that that channel was being undervalued significantly from like a last click perspective. So all this data supported the need for like a more holistic approach to channel evaluation and like in-channel optimizations, and helped us make a case for a solution that would help both these like macro level and micro level optimizations that we can make. I think like making decisions off of limited data or incorrect data obviously delivers like pretty limited results, right? And our approach to attribution, this might be like a bad thing to say, but I think perfect is the enemy of good, right? I don't think there's like a silver bullet in attribution. I don't think anyone will ever find that, but just strive to get to a point where it's as good as it can possibly be, understanding like the limitations of it and working towards that consistently to try and improve every day yields better results like long-term.
I don't think it's a bad thing to say at all. That's what I spend my entire day reminding people.
Yeah, I think too many people come in with the approach or the mindset that like there is a silver bullet in attribution, that you're going to be able to get this super clear read on everything. And that's just not the case. And that's why like a multi-touch model is super valuable to us, but also like understanding that in context of like lift studies or incrementality studies, right? To kind of pair those together, then you're giving yourself like the best opportunity to make those decisions that will yield the best possible outcomes.
Definitely. I think like absolutely the approach that you guys have taken evolving models, how you look at TV, how you look at survey responses is really interesting. We'll be chatting more about that.
Sure. So I mentioned in my intro that we're moving into offline channels. So we're sort of testing these new channels and adding them to our media mix where they weren't previously. So the attribution models we were using before were working well for digital channels, meaning we're looking at platform UI data, we're looking at UTMs that are coming in when people click through to our website, and we were looking at our How Do You Hear About Us survey and sort of able to triangulate those three data sources and understand performance of each channel. When we started to introduce offline channels, there's bigger gaps than introduced. You don't have the clicks, you don't have platform data in the same way that you do for a digital channel. So our really only source that looked at both offline and digital channels together was the survey. But there's obviously biases in survey because we're asking people to tell us how they came to find out about Curology. So there's some limitations in just what do people interpret that question? Is that their first time that they heard about us? Is that their last time that they heard about us and what sent them to the website? And then we also know that people were sometimes selecting offline channels that we weren't even running in. So there's an inherent bias to the way that people are answering the question. They may be selecting TV before we were ever on TV. So how do we interpret those results and you take them with a level of skepticism to truly understand that performance? So ultimately, we also went with a multi-touch attribution solution because we know that all of those different touch points play a role. And in the offline space, we're more likely to impact an earlier touch point or at least be able to track a different type of touch point that's not going to be your last touch. So for our digital channels, the last touch worked enough that we could make optimizations. As we introduced more offline channels, that became less reliable for us. And so now we look at a combination of a last touch model and our survey data and a multi-touch. Ultimately, we're working on that multi-touch model to be able to give us a more holistic view and more accurately map offline to digital channels, hopefully in a more accurate way.
I'm curious if you tried out, there's a lot of pros and cons with this, tried out sort of unique landing pages or unique coupon codes to try to help you bridge the gap, or did you just learn it's a giant pain in the ass for someone to type in like Halloween 2015, 23 makeup into like their checkout when they see it on TV or a podcast or something like that?
Yeah, so it's definitely something that we've tried to some extent. I think it depends on the channel. So when we're talking about podcasts, based on user behavior, we know that people who are listening to podcasts sometimes have an extra affinity for the host or for the podcast that they're listening to. They may be more likely to actually go to that specific website or enter in that specific promo code than they would be, say, in a Curology.com/TV URL. right? So I think depending on the channel, you may see more accuracy with something like a vanity URL or promo code. The other thing that can drive people to sort of redeem those codes or go specifically to those URLs is if there's a specific offer that they get with that. With Curology, we have one offer that we use across all of our channels. So all of our new users are able to sign up for a free 1 month trial. So we don't have a unique offer that we are giving people when they use a specific vanity URL. So there's not a motivation to go that extra step for our users to either go to the vanity URL or go to a specific promo code. So we don't believe that the usage of those like specific codes is going to be high enough to give us an accurate sense of performance. So we end up managing multiple landing pages and multiple codes for not that much of a payoff on the attribution side, because people are still just going to our homepage and converting from there because they can see the same offer, or they don't see the they don't have, you know, motivation or something that incentivizes them to go to that specific page.
Makes a lot of sense.
When we first started like OTT, Hulu specifically, we were running there, we ran like a vanity promo code, and we hardly got any redemptions for it. So we kind of like discounted that channel and thought that wasn't a great channel for us. But then when we onboarded Rockerbox, we were able to get that impression pixel set up and realize that it's actually a pretty big driver of conversions for us. And it was able to like help us reallocate some budget towards that channel to help drive some upper funnel prospects that would end up converting.
That's awesome. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's crazy with promo codes and what we see across 70 plus DTC brands. Like, it's funny, like, we all receive something like direct mail, and it's crazy the number of people that won't even use the promo and the offer in the direct mail. They'll instead go search, now click on a branded search, then go find an affiliate, click on the affiliate link, and convert. Now it's that cost you roughly 2x to get that same user, because you've had to pay out the affiliates on top of it. And so I think your question spot on, like, promo periods and asking to work in some channels and then getting you nowhere in others, but realizing, oh, we have all these other mechanisms to track, becomes hugely helpful. And even if you want to actually hit on like one other big insight that you weren't expecting to discover, but then as you started to get more transparency into that full user path of conversion, you were able to unlock. I know putting up a spot on this one. We can come back to it. Or Quinn?
No, that's a good question. I will have to think about that. Yeah, I would have to think about that more.
Awesome. So one question you got from the audience as we were chatting is just sticking on multi-direct attribution. If any of you guys want to chat a bit more about the approach you're taking or the considerations going in, you got big part of it, and just also having all of your marketing channels included, of course. Anyone want to drop in?
So the question is like, why multi-touch or like how do you tackle the overall?
I think the question is more the latter.
How you're tackling it overall and why multi-touch?
Yeah, I think there's a simple way to answer it. Just with, you know, other types of attribution, there's just like a counterintuitive to it. Like last touch, it doesn't make sense that you made a decision based off the most recent thing. I think linear attribution is also that way. It's counterintuitive that you would just give equal credit to anything you bumped into. But you know, attribution is one of those things, because what it's grasping at is like the question of why we do things. It's very easy to think you wanted a donut one morning because it was cold outside, it's comfort food, but really you saw maple leaf on a truck on your morning walk or something. So I think that in theory, if you get your multi-touch down to a point where you feel very strong about it, and everyone's touched on this, you can never feel perfect about it. It's sort of impossible. But as long as you can feel very strong about it, then it really does become quite simple, because you're able to say, at least in an acquisition play, this customer cost us $22 this week, it cost us $21 next week, and they're worth $112 over the next 6 months. So it's just easy. Now, obviously, it's not that simple and it's not that easy. But I do think that when things are sort of working and you're understanding how your multi-touch is working, you have good confidence in it, then you can make a lot of big decisions with really simple numbers.
I love the donut and maple leaf analogy. Did you just make that up right now, or have you actually just run across a maple leaf and then decided you wanted a maple bar?
Yes, I have. I think, but actually that was why I thought of it, was I was trying to figure out why I wanted that maple bar that morning. And I think if you asked me, I would tell you it's because I liked them when I was a kid, but I don't know why I wanted it that day. And I think that's why attribution is interesting. It's one of those things that a machine can do better than yourself even, and not in the way like a plow or a, you know, bottling plant can. Yeah. But I was thinking about that this morning. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
I do want a maple bar. I haven't obtained one. So.
Makes a lot of sense. And you touch upon an interesting point of a machine being able to do it better than humans, because we naturally want certain channels and ads to succeed, probably because we've put a lot more effort into certain ads and channels. And then you get really frustrated when like a plain text, like Word with like a white background beats everything. So I totally hear you on that. Digging into also getting buy-in, which I think is probably one of the more difficult portions of attribution, because I think you probably have to believe in the fact that you're doing the best you can if you're taking it on with the information in front of you. But are there any consistent questions that you feel like you have to answer over and over again from trying to get buy-in, particularly from people internally who may not fully understand that, you know, it's a very imperfect science? Or maybe that's a poor question because you don't want to call out your bosses. But
I think like when you're trying to ladder up to the executive level without them having experience in it, like I could show them like an LTV to CAC analysis of all of our channels. And they would probably just say like, well, why don't we invest more in brand paid search? And obviously like you can't do that. You have to drive something up funnel to generate that traffic in the first place. So stepping back and helping them understand like this is a more holistic approach than just seeing what's working on paper and kind of laddering up your strategy that way.
And do you have a consistent way that you do kind of say that, or did you just sort of say it right there? Because it's difficult. How do you tell someone like, oh, wow, the search thing, it's so much more profitable. Why would you even do anything else? Like, it's honestly a difficult thing to give a good answer to someone who, you know, isn't sitting in your shoes every day. So yeah. And as Guillaume mentioned here, same for affiliate. Why don't you just triple your affiliate budget every week? You know, that's super profitable. How do you have that conversation? Because I actually don't think it's very easy.
I think just physically showing your boss is the best way. Like one of the first things I did when we were really digging into these attribution problems we're having, I'd pull up like our Facebook account and get them in it and say like, Facebook says they're driving like a third of our conversions every month. Like, do we actually believe that? Or do we think they're like overcrediting themselves in platform? And then stepping back, like if we add their in-platform conversions to Google's in-platform conversions to our display in-platform conversions, like this number is three times what we're seeing in our monthly conversion total, right? So there's a big problem there. And I think just helping them understand that helps them realize like we need to like dedupe our conversions across all these channels, first of all. And then from there, like understand the impact like a specific channel has in one user's conversion journey.
I think another way to address the branded search question, which I think comes up for a lot of people, is to look at the number of searches that your brand is getting, right? So if you assumed you captured every single conversion for somebody who searched for your brand, is that enough? Does that meet your goals? And if it doesn't, then you need to drive up the number of searches that people are doing for your brand. And so how are you going to do that? How are you going to impact that behavior? And ultimately then you'd serve them with an ad and convert them at that point, but you have to be able to impact them to make those searches in the first place.
To that, I'll ask, what are the different, in a similar vein around mounting up, but helping explain the need to invest in top funnel, especially all being at growth stage direct-to-consumer brands, and both getting everyone to understand that both conceptually, but then once you get those channels running, actually to your exact point, being able to quantify their impact on other channels.
I can jump in since offline is often thought of as more of a top funnel set of channels than a lot of the digital channels. I think the most important piece, and this is where the multi-touch attribution solution comes in, is being able to map that pathway to conversion. So being able to say, okay, somebody saw a TV ad and then they went and did the branded search is an important connection that we need to make. But in order to do that, we have to know who got that TV impression and who actually saw that. So having a model that can connect those two touch points together is the most direct way to quantify the impact of those top funnel channels. I think, you know, a less direct way would be to look at something like a brand lift study, where you're looking at the impact that the channel had purely on your brand awareness or your recall or a perception, like intend to buy, and then ultimately looking at did that have an impact on your sales either in the same time frame or in the same market that you ran that study, and trying to make a connection that way. So there's a couple ways at it. It depends, I think, on how big of an investment you're trying to make in top funnel channels and how closely you want to tie those through to performance.
I think it's like a similar story. Like our internal data warehouse, like the attribution modeling setup there is just based off the click level, right? So having that impression level view helps us like understand that full consumer decision journey. Because if I just ran some like analysis based off that internal click model, like we get like crazy discrepancies, like email is driving a lot of conversions, right? Well, obviously, but how are those people even signing up for our internal email program? They're coming from somewhere. And incorporating those view-based touch points is so valuable to help you stitch together like a really good picture of the full life cycle of the customer.
Yeah. And building on that, how do you guys start thinking about LTV and not just tying your CPA to LTV, but then what insights that you could take from seeing that full path and conversion and feeding those in into as indicators into an LTV predictive model or score?
Yeah, I'm going to have a terrible answer. I feel like that stuff is, isn't it just getting into your Excel and doing the math? Like,
yes.
That's the least fun part. I mean, we can do it and we can talk about it. And if someone can talk about it in a fun way, that would be great. But I don't think I can. I don't mind doing it, but you know, it's part of what makes me boring. But you got to do that, right? You got to do the math on that and think about it in different ways. And I would say with anything, don't have too rigid of a model, right? Like be open to looking at it different ways. And definitely with LTV, keep refreshing it and try to think about segments. Because you don't want to miss something. You don't want to miss something about your customer or think that you're acquiring weaker customers when you're not.
I think it's a bad answer. It's very correct. Having the data is one thing. Being able to actually see every touch point into you through is one thing. But then it's actually saying, all right, which of this is actionable, taking a few different passes at factoring those touch points into an LTV model, seeing where you're seeing a good, a strong coefficient can be a good indicator. And then, yeah, to the point, like refreshing it as your marketing exchanges. I mean, one of the biggest things, and especially across all three of your brands, is as you're testing new channels, seeing the impact of that on path to conversion and also efficiency across channels. I mean, if you had want to hit on, especially because you all have tested new channels this year, having to think about testing and measuring the impact of this.
I think like one of the issues we've fallen into in the past is not starting with a really good testing plan. I think that's the first step. Like I think a lot of people are just like, oh, this is a cool new channel. We should try it. It makes sense for our brand. Let's just spend for a month in it and see how it works. But I think that's you're setting yourself up for failure if you do that. I think you need to really map out like an entire test flight over like maybe a 3-month time period. And thinking through all the optimization levers you have to pull in that channel before you actually get into it. So you have a plan of attack to work towards setting that test up for the best possible chance for success. I think a lot of marketers, like I said, will just jump into a channel, test it for a month without giving yourself enough data or time to make those optimizations and then just call the channel a failure. And that's kind of what I mentioned with Hulu, right? Like if we hadn't unlocked that insight through Rockerbox's MTA model, we would still be dark in that channel. And that's a huge contribution to our business right now.
Well, obviously, that's awesome for me to hear.
That brings up an interesting question, right? And this is one that, much like attribution, does not have a perfect answer. You'll never have as much information as you'd like to do everything perfectly, but how do you think about a go or stop working toward a decision with certain channels? And maybe it might not be a broad answer. You may have just experienced it with one of the channels that you attempted launching sometime in the last year or two and then realized, okay, well, hey, we think we've done what we could have here and just we're learning it just isn't right. Are there any great indications to know that you should stop trying to optimize a channel and try to make it work versus, hey, it's just kind of not working right now, but we haven't tried as much as we could have or should have, so let's keep going? And I ask this question because it's a very difficult question for me to answer because I don't think I've ever figured out a perfect answer.
For me, I think like trying to get a read on a channel that you're evaluating all your other channels based off. So like one of the big things we look at is an LTV to CAC analysis, but we also incorporate like a payback period. So like, for example, OTT like might have like a really, really strong LTV to CAC, but if that payback period is twice as long as a channel that drives just like half that LTV to CAC, then it's kind of a wash, right? And being able to like reinvest your money quicker to get more ROI at a faster rate, that improves your velocity. So I think being able to step back and set up that test so you can get enough data to compare it to other channels, how you normally compare your channels, is like the big step.
I also want to chime in there. We got a good question. I think actually sort of hit on, but instead saying quit. The moment you guys realized you needed a true third-party measurement solution, Ashley didn't hit on it well. The moment they started really wanting to scale spend with offline, where we see is that's one of the most common indicators. And second is as you start scaling spend beyond Facebook and Google and realizing, staying to your point, oh, wait, Facebook and Google are taking 2x credit with complete duplication. What are other platforms going to do? Wait, I can't have 3x myself. But I'm curious, saying because you were there from the start, what that process was like in Haven Money.
Yeah, so like when I first came on, just looking at GA, they have like a attribution modeling tool. And you can see there's a significant percentage of conversions that would be reallocated based on like a first click or a last click view. So that was like the first indication, I think, that we needed a more comprehensive attribution solution. And to be totally transparent, we used DoubleClick right after that. And I think if you're setting up any sort of attribution where that channel gets to grade its own homework, I think you're setting yourself up for failure. So having like an independent third party running your attribution system, I think, is incredibly important, because when we were using DoubleClick, we would get like less Facebook conversions than even just our internal numbers would report. And it would like credit those all to like Google paid search, right? So it's just constantly figuring out like the nuances of these different platforms and realizing like, if you want to set yourself up for success, you have to have something that's independent third party apart from like a Google solution. Like, I don't think there's one entire comprehensive marketing suite, right? You have to have gut checks against everything.
Why not go for it?
Yeah, no, I think everything that, you know, Sane was saying is right on. Like, but it's kind of obvious that you can't use like Facebook's attribution, for example. Like, it's just not intuitive. It just doesn't mirror what your business is doing. You know, and it's something as simple as, oh, you'll scale spend. And if you do the math, you're just paying more for customers. But in Facebook, your efficiency has gone down. Like, if your business is like, we're at 5% of our gross dollars is going to go to our marketing, and that's it, then maybe you don't need a multi-touch attribution. But I think really any other scenario, I wouldn't want to work without one, even if you're doing it yourself. And I actually have done that. I've written little junky algorithms in SQL to try to do my own attribution, my own multi-touch, just so that I had something. So I think I think once you've started to think about it and when you've played with things, or if you've ever been in a situation where you just turned off a marketing channel and you didn't lose customers or vice versa, or they shifted, then you would just know the value of it. Like, I don't know how else you would make these decisions.
Absolutely. Anything to add in there?
I think these guys covered it. I mean, I think there's that point for offline. I think the other piece is when you're looking at your different data sources, as long as they're all trending in the same direction and you feel like you have a good sense of what the true performance is with maybe a more conservative view than what your platform is telling you, but you still know you're sort of somewhere in the middle and you can make decisions off of that, then maybe what you're using is working. If that gap gets bigger and bigger and you're in the place where the platforms are taking like a illogical number of, you know, amount of credit or conversions, and you don't have anything to sort of check that attribution against, you're going to need a more comprehensive solution that's going to get you something that you can actually make decisions off of.
Awesome. And then I have to say, like, as you guys all got to that point, I know I asked at the start, I wouldn't come back for this because I did put it on the spot. What was like one aha insight as you started to get that more transparency that you uncovered? Did anyone think of one? I know staying hit on with Hulu by extension.
I mean, everyone did mention that coupon codes on TV don't work. So that's a pretty big aha across the board.
Also, we'll give away one more. They don't work on out of home and they don't work on podcasts. They at best work a direct mail, but even then, for example, people will still go and search and click on an affiliate. One great tactic a lot of these guys deploy is using a post-purchase survey to track some of their hard-to-capture channels and then still insert this touch point only use path to conversion. And like saying it best, like you guys also like don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Like all using as many different mechanisms to track channels as possible. One question we got a bunch of is, and I kind of want everyone to chime in on this, is like, what's one or two pieces of advice that you give to a DTC brand starting to figure out attribution? I mean, like even going off the theme of trying not to get everything perfect is a great one, but if there's anything else you guys want to offer in.
The other thing I would add is it's very easy to overcomplicate an attribution model. I'd say focus on what are the decisions that you're trying to make based on the model and pick a solution that's going to work for those decisions. So much is changing with attribution all the time, and your needs for all of that level of either granularity or including certain channels. Like if you're not moving into the offline space, then you may not need as robust of a conversion pathing as you do if you are. So I think look at your media mix, look at the needs of the business and pick the solution that's going to help you drive action and not just get data for data's sake. If you can't operationalize it, it will quickly become complicated and very complex and resource heavy to maintain.
I love that. I think that's oftentimes the difference between someone's working with a data scientist and a marketer, right? A data scientist will find incredibly interesting patterns. And then the marketer will be like, I don't know what to do with this, but it's a really badass histogram. So yeah, if you can't make it actionable, what's the point?
Stay or quit?
Yeah, I think we were talking about just one piece of advice to give someone, right? I think the first thing is just asking really good questions, like challenging your assumptions. Start asking just simple questions like, how valuable are impressions to you? How complex is your value prop? How long do you think your consumer decision journey is? And then trying to come up with some tests to prove that out on paper. And then looking at, like I kind of mentioned earlier, what would your reallocation be for conversions comparing like a first touch to a last touch model? And then, like I said, challenging your own assumptions. I think you can, starting with incrementality tests is a great way to start learning, even if they are in platform, like even if it is like a Facebook brand lit test, like obviously take that with a grain of salt, but does it kind of align with what you are seeing in your own model you currently have set up, whether that's like last click or even wait. And then I think, again, just asking as many questions as you can to your entire team, like your data analysts, your coordinators, your exec team, and figuring out like what you need to be solving for. And I think that should give you like a pretty good path forward.
what Ashley said about not overcomplicating it is definitely key. And then I think the other X factor that you should try to figure out quickly is what Stang said, is the how long is your customer's journey? Because you want to have the right expectations. Because, you know, if you are investing in a multi-touch, and hopefully it's one that you like and trust and works for you, then those are the two things you need to know. Yeah, I think those are the two things you need to know. What's it getting me, and how long is the path so that I'm not like pulling out of something too early? You know, you have the right expectations for growing it. I think those are both great. And I will say I've worked with quite a few multi-touch platforms, and I do very much think Rockerbox is excellent. That's why I said yes to this. And I don't know if I've talked about that much. I think it's really good. One of the things I've always done in my career is I'm somewhere between a marketer and a data scientist. And I always go into the back end and try to vet and see what the algorithm's doing, just looking at lines of data or doing my own, you know, joins. And so I always try to audit my multi-touch attributions as best as I can, or even have my own one on the side to kind of vet it. But I don't think you need that. I think if you've got a good one, then you can trust it. You can begin to trust it.
That's awesome. Thank you. We appreciate that. I'm scrolling through. I wanted to ask more questions, but let me try to get everyone's questions.
I'll give a quick little promo for Rockerbox too. The way this event came about was I met the CEO over there, Ron. And, you know, I think when I asked him, like, okay, there's attribution services out there. What's interesting about what you guys do, what you got to do for your customers? I think one thing that I really aligned with was like, well, whatever we do, I don't know if we do enough. You know, I think like he has this mentality that like wherever we are, we need to do better. And, you know, if there are holes to be filled, we want to be the ones to fill it and all of that. So I think that mentality, that customer kind of focused mentality, and always thinking you're sort of behind the curve and aren't doing enough will generally lead you to kind of make the right decisions instead of overselling and pretending that you have everything on earth when that gets really old. And I think we try to approach our kind of service to our clients the same way too. We're always kind of worried we're not doing enough. So yeah, I just think it's a good mentality to have.
Yeah, no, we appreciate it. And it's funny because a lot of the questions are similar, being like, how do you handle not having everything in? And while we didn't ask those explicitly, like you guys all spoke to them, which is you're never going to get every single solitary conversion attributable to marketing, and you will go insane trying to do that. But instead saying, what are all the different tactics we can to make that incrementally better every day and make sure we're getting to a place where we have significant data that is actionable to optimize off of. Almost completely, because I know we still have 8 minutes, and I appreciate all the Rockerbox kind words. I always want to flip this in the last bit. We got a couple questions about MMM. So, of course, the most amazing part of our world in, oh, I almost said, there's nothing amazing about our world in 2020. But the most amazing part about this period is we do have such robust tracking that we really can get that user level below path to conversion. Of course, before all of that existed, you had media mix modeling, which is the exact opposite of our bottoms-up approach, and it's at a top-down approach. I'm curious your thoughts on the role of MMM for modern companies today. Did you guys have one? Ashley, you want to figure anything that we're saying? Go for it.
This is like pretty anecdotal at best, so I'll take this with a grain of salt, but like one of our data analysts on our team previously worked for an agency that ran marketing for Procter & Gamble. And he said their budgets were the only one he's ever seen where they could get a good read on MMM. So for us, we're a startup, right? We don't have a ton of capital to deploy. And I think you need to have a huge budget to get a really solid read on MMM, from my understanding. And like another piece of that, that's like a long-term approach. And I think that's obviously very important. But at the end of the day, like if you go to your coordinators and give them like data saying Facebook has a 6% lift over like non-brand search, how are they going to like make changes day to day in platform to like facilitate that?
Yeah, actionability of it. Aslan, various your thoughts.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that. I mean, I think it goes back to the conversation we were having about, is it operational or not? I think depending on how you manage your budgets, how you build your forecasts. A lot of that at D2C companies is bottoms up. And so if you are only looking at your media mix performance from tops down, you then have to bridge that gap and make it actionable on a day-to-day basis, which an MTA is likely going to match that sort of framework and the way that you're actually operating the channels more closely. Now, I have in my previous life used an MMM when we were doing bigger scale campaigns with longer lead planning, and you're sort of looking at, you know, maybe annual budgets or forecasting at those higher spend levels when you aren't needing to make the connection to sort of day-to-day performance and efficiency. So I think they have a role. I think it's important to understand those sort of macro trends we were talking about. And a lot of times you can get a better read on those in an MMM if you are kind of having a customer pathway or a purchase journey that is impacted by those promotions, things like that, seasonality. But for a lot of D2C marketers, it's not going to be particularly operational in my perspective.
I'm laughing because it started to come up more and everyone lands in the same place you guys do, which is that it's something that, yeah, like when you were a Procter, when you were a Unilever way or Microsoft, and also all of those companies not being in the advantageous position you are of having that direct consumer relationship and that direct consumer data to do a one-to-one. That's where they were all forced to do an MMM. And I didn't intentionally do this, but it actually fits perfectly into like the broader theme of what you guys have hit on over the last hour, which is not letting perfection be the enemy of good. Where they people result to MMM because like, oh, well, if I don't have every single touch point against every single user, I don't want to throw it out and do something top down that's less actionable. I think what you guys hit on that so spot on is, you know, we're going to do the best that we can, get as many touch points, as many conversions, keeping it simple along the way, and then leveraging that, getting transparency into path conversion, starting to optimize, starting to test and learn, and then continuing to go and refine from there. Curious, how do you guys, I know the answer, but throw it out there, think about goaling based on funnel position? So goaling differently for top funnel, middle funnel, bottom funnel.
It's difficult for us, right? Because we're still in the growth phase. So profitability is less important, right? I think those two metrics, like profitability and growth, don't play very well together. I think we all wish they would. But being able to balance like what is driving conversions at like the most profitable perspective and allocating budget towards that. And that's why we lean so heavily on like an LTV to CAC analysis and incorporate that payback period so we can reinvest that money we make back into the growth model and hopefully create those kind of like acquisition loops that drive future success. I don't know if that answers the question at all, but.
Yeah, no, I thought that was good. I think it is kind of a tricky thing to answer overall. One thing that I would potentially warn about is I encourage everyone to experiment, but if there's anything where it's like you get a ton of traffic for really cheap, just, you know, be careful. That can be good, but, you know, just how would you say that? If something's not too good to be true, it might be. Yeah.
Yeah, I think after all, you guys are smart and it's CPA coupled with a ROAS, so you're looking at NOV or same support CAC to LTV, asking, looking at obviously subscriptions, and everyone has luckily evolved beyond just like a straight up CPL, CPA world as well. Well, I know we are at time in this. I'm not sure how to use it in these. I would say everyone, thank you so much for these great questions. Obviously staying quid athlete for participating. This was, as expected, a ton of fun. Thank you guys. Griff.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture, Talent, and Growth. If you found value in this conversation, please leave a review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend. You can visit bringruckus.com for more ways to connect. And remember, new episodes come out on Tuesday.